Hey guys, welcome back to The Controversial Mom. I'm your host, Emily Jones. And let me tell you, I got a pretty controversial topic for us today. A few months ago, I talked about something that happened in the legislative session that really and truly was a huge win for parents in our state. It was raising the age of medical consent. So prior to this legislative change, the age of medical consent, or they call it age of majority for some weird reason, but it was 14 in the state of Alabama. So that meant that at 14 years old, kids could go to the doctor and make medical decisions for themselves. Beyond that, a parent could take a child to the doctor, and during the exam, the doctor, the nurse, the whoever would ask the parent to leave so that they could have a private conversation with a 14-year-old kid. Now, I personally know some parents that said, absolutely not, I'm staying in here, I don't care. And the nurse had to look at the kid and ask for permission, and the kid was, you know, very caught off guard and, of course, consented. But it's this really weird thing in our state. We were one of the few states that had medical age of majority set so low. So thankfully, we had some really good fighters in the legislature that were willing to fight this and filed legislation to raise it from 14 to 18. Now, it's the legislative process, it's politics, y'all know the game. There were some negotiations along the way, and instead of getting the bill passed at the age of 18, it got it to 16. It's not perfect. It's less than we want. The fight continues. But the good news is that the same people that already fought this battle are willing to fight it again, and they plan to file legislation for the 2026 legislative session to raise it all the way up to 18. It will be a fight. It's going to take every single one of us getting involved, rallying behind them, making our voices heard to get this raised to 18. This is common sense, but I promise you, it's going to be a major, major, major fight. So there is much to do on the front of just raising the age of medical consent, or the age of medical majority, all the way up to 18. But there's also work to do with enforcing the current revised law. So the bill that was filed last year was Senate Bill 101. And it did multiple things, right? It raised the age of medical majority up to 16. Talk through that. But it also did a couple of other things. It included some specific verbiage around mental health services in the public school systems. Now, if you've listened to me at all over the years, you know this is a very hot topic for me, because I personally don't think that mental health services belong in our schools. Our schools are failing miserably. We've got to increase the reading comprehension of our kids, our math competencies, all these things. But I will say, at least if we can get mental health services to be fully opt-in, then I can settle for that at the moment. And this bill, the SB 101, really started getting us closer to that point. Well, let me rephrase that. It got us to that point if it were just being implemented that way. So the bill specifically included a carve out, or a definition, I should say, for mental health services in schools. And I'm going to read the exact verbiage that's included in this now law, because it is extremely critical to understand that when we start diving into today's topic. So in this piece of legislation that passed, that was signed by the governor, that is now law, it clearly states mental health in schools. Defined mental health schools includes services, treatment, surveys, or assessments relating to mental health, including but not limited to guidance counseling, keep that in mind, and any programming offered by an employee or independent contractor of a local board of education relating to mental health, suicide counseling, or bully counseling. Parents include a student's parent or legal guardian as applicable. And then it talks about imminent threat, means a known or foreseeable danger that could occur in the immediate or near future. Except as provided in the previous paragraph that I read, no student of a public K-12 school 16 years of age or under age 16 may be allowed to participate in any ongoing school counseling services, including but not limited to mental health services, unless specific written instruction has been granted by the student's parent. So basically what that's saying is it defines what mental health is, which includes general counseling. It includes instruction on suicide counseling and bully counseling. Those two are very specific. I'll explain those in a minute. But basically what that says is general counseling and those two specific topics cannot be presented to kids unless the parent opts in for those services. Now, the full piece of legislation, once it was signed by Governor Ivey, went into effect on 1 October. So if you don't have kids in public school, let me give you a little background on how this process works. When you register your kid for public school, there is a section in the registration process to opt in for any of these counseling programs. So when I registered my son in the summer for this current school year, I had to go through that process. But on 1 October, the definition of all of this changed. The parameters of all these counseling classes changed. So every parent with a child in public school under the age of 16 had to redo their opt-in form in order for, air quotes, the schools to be compliant with law. I put air quotes around it. You'll understand why. So that happened on October the 22nd. And yes, I remember the date because I sat there to myself and thought, well, the law went into effect on 1 October, but we're not getting this out on until almost, you know, over halfway through the month. So we're already not compliant because that should have been done prior to the law going into effect. But I'm splitting hairs, so we'll move on. So I get this new opt-in form. And y'all know me, I was super excited to get this because finally I'm going to have the opt-in form that aligns with my values, that allows me to completely opt out of all this crap from my child. I no longer have to go check him out of school to prevent him from being exposed to this. Like, I was excited. It did not last long, I assure you. So I took screenshots of the opt-in form, and I want to make sure I read it specifically. Anytime I reference it, I'm reading it. When I did an op-ed the other week, I included screenshots because I think it's very important that people actually hear the verbiage verbatim because it matters. Language matters. So in the opt-in form, you get, you know, your child's name. A lot of it's kind of pre-filled out based on school records. It's got the child's name, their age, and literally track the age down to the years and the number of months. Like, that's how specific it was. So goes through all that, and then you have, you know, your three or four choices of things that you can opt into. Small group counseling, specialized counseling. I don't know what the rest of them were because I didn't opt into them. But after that little section of the options that you can opt into, there's a footnote. And it says, please note, and it's got three things to note. The one that matters is the third bullet. Please note your selection does not impact your child's participation in any instructional coursework required by Alabama law, such as the Jamari Terrell Williams Act and the Jason Flatt Act. The Alabama Department of Education has stated, and this is in quotes, instruction, advisement, occasional interventions are not subject to opt-in requirements, as these are regular duties of school counselors and other educators. So herein lies the problem. The Department of Education has decided that it can create its own loophole to go around the new state law. This is not new. This is what they've always done. This is what I've been screaming about for years. We got a revised law that it expanded and specifically addressed mental health services, and yet our Department of Education gave our governor, gave the legislature, gave parents the middle finger and said, we don't care what you did, we're still going to do what we want. And we're going to force kids into instruction, advisement, and occasional interventions without so much as calling a parent to talk to them about it. That's a major problem. I'm not really sure what occasional interventions would be other than they can occasionally have a one-on-one conversation with your child about how they feel at home and never tell you about it. And that's probably a pretty extreme example, but it's a relevant example. It doesn't matter. You should not be allowed to talk to my child unless there is an imminent threat or concern of abuse. Now, those situations, everything's totally different. And the law actually, the updated law, actually specifies those two instances. If there's an imminent threat or concerns of neglect, then yes, teachers, counselors, administrators, whatever, can engage with kids without parental consent. And we would all agree with that. If a child's being abused, absolutely, mandatory reporters, they need to check into that. I mean, I'm not a mandatory reporter, but if I had suspicions that someone was being abused, I'm going to ask questions. Like, we can all agree on that. But this idea that my son's having a bad day and he seems grumpy and the counselor can pull him aside and say, well, what's going on at home that makes you unhappy? That's not okay. That's not neglect. That is, or abuse. That is, he's had a bad day and he's going to get over it. That does not mean that anybody can engage and start putting ideas in his mind around his mental well-being. The other thing on the opt-in form, exceptions to the opt-in requirement. Now, this is further down on the form, but it's worth highlighting. And again, I'm going to read this verbatim because it's very important that we're dealing with facts here. Again, under guidance from the Alabama State Department of Education, general instruction, academic advisement, and occasional support provided by school counselors do not require parent or guardian consent. By law, mental health services may be provided without consent if there is an imminent threat to the health of the student or others, suspected abuse, neglect, or exploitation, and when there is an immediate necessity for immediate grief counseling. Again, most of that I can agree with. I don't have issues with academic advisement. That's what most of us grew up with counselors doing, is academic advisement, helping us understand what to do after school or after graduation. Academic advisement is not an issue for me. The imminent threat stuff, we're totally on board with. Suspected abuse, totally fine. Neglect, exploitation, all got it, we're on board. But where it starts to become a problem is when it says, if there's an immediate necessity for grief counseling. I don't even understand what that truly means. Because when I think grief counseling, I think my dog died, or, you know, a family member passed away, or I'm really sad and I'm just grieving for a loss. Why does that require immediate counseling from somebody in the school system? And I don't know, maybe I just had this like perfect little life and people have severe grief that requires immediate counseling on the spot. I just didn't grow up in a world where that was necessary. Parents did their jobs, grandparents, aunts, uncles, family, friends that knew what was going on in the child's life and could lean in and help. I failed to understand why a counselor would need to provide immediate grief counseling without talking to a parent. I don't know. Maybe y'all've got really great examples of why that wouldn't need to happen. I've yet to figure it out, and it's been years of me thinking through all of these things, and there's just nothing. So here's why I bring all this up. One, it's just a continuation of the problem that we've had for a really long time, and I want to make sure that every parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, whatever out there understands your children are still being exposed to mental health counseling in schools despite you not opting in. And I had somebody email me recently and tell me, well, no, you just need to talk to the principal. I did. I talked to the counselor, I talked to the principal, I talked to the district coordinator. For 3 years in a row, I've done this, and I keep getting the same answer. If you think your kids, your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, your whatever, are not being exposed to counseling principles, you are wrong. It is happening. Now, the way that it's happening may be different than my experience. That's totally possible. But there is absolutely no way that a school can be compliant with what the Department of Education is putting out and not teach this. It is an actual standard. If you go look at the standards for Alabama public schools, there is a counseling standard. I have found it. I've looked at it. It's very alarming. And if you want to know about it, search, just Google 1819 News, Emily Jones, op-ed, and it's titled something about parents should be furious. And in that op-ed, I have screenshots. I talk about exactly what they're being exposed to. And it's DEI. It's all about accepting diverse cultures, accepting alternate lifestyles. It's all stuff that should not be pushed on our kids. But the Alabama Department of Education standards specify all of it. So it's in there. Whether you want to believe it or not, it is there. If your school's not teaching it, your school is not meeting the standards of the Alabama Department of Education. And maybe they're not. Hopefully there are some bold schools out there that are not doing it. But I've yet to find one that's not. And I will point out, the stuff that I read today came specifically from the opt-in form that I received for my son. But I did confirm that exact same language came from three other opt-in forms in three other systems. So this was not unique to just my school system. It was language that was pushed out to all schools. They're all using it. So here's the thing. This is a battle that we have to have. I, as a parent directly affected by it, have to deal with this very separately or very specifically to my situation. But if you're not a parent with a child in the school system, then you have to fight this a little differently. And what does that look like? That looks like voting for really strong people in the 2026 election. Because at the end of the day, what is happening is we have a department within the state of Alabama that has said, I will not follow the law. They are interpreting the law however they see fit and then implementing it as they want. That is a massive issue that has to be fixed within the state at a state level. I can't go to my local district and complain about it because their hands are tied. This is something that has to be done at a state level. Whether it's the governor engaging and saying fix it, whether it's the AG doing an investigation and saying fix it, whatever it is, it has to be fixed at a state level. So as we're nearing 2026, because it's just weeks away, the qualifying for the 2026 elections ends mid to late January. So we're getting to that big crunch time for state level elections. If you do not know what positions are on the ballot, you need to find out quickly. And then you need to start researching these people. You need to know who is going to stand up and fight for your rights as a citizen of our state and as a parent, like me, with kids in the school system, kids that are going to the doctor's office, all these things. You need to know who's the AG candidate that's going to stand up and fight and take on all these issues and say, no more of the Department of Education interpreting laws. That is done by the legislature, and we will handle that. Get out of it. So make sure you're doing your homework. Research these candidates. If you have questions, ask people around you for their input. If they can't answer them, send me a note. I will give you my personal opinion and only my personal opinion because I can't endorse candidates for anybody outside of just my personal opinion. But do your homework. Know what's going on, know who's on the ballot, and know who is going to actually stand up and fight and deliver on the promises that matter most to you. So thanks for stopping by, guys. I hope that this was helpful. If you have questions on any of it, as always, send me a note. Y'all know I love to talk about this stuff. So thanks for joining. I'll see you next week.